For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
The answer as profound and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Now I can see and hear it, accept and maintain. Good morning, everyone. For those who are new, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here. And I'm very happy to have giving the talk this morning, Gyoshin Laurel Ross. Laurel's our Eno, or head of the meditation hall. So thank you very much, Laurel.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Happy December solstice. So at 5:03 p.m. Central Standard Time, the northern hemisphere of the Earth will reach the point where it starts tilting back toward the sun. We're the farthest away in our tilt right now, and that makes it, in our hemisphere, the shortest period of daylight and the longest period of darkness, which Thoreau says in winter time, we lead a more inward life. So anthropologists say this is the oldest holiday. These holidays of solstice and equinox will celebrate the equinox on March 20th when the daylight and darkness will be equal. And I like paying attention to these events that call our attention to the passing of time. Time is it's a pretty difficult concept to get your arms around. A lot of philosophers and scientists have sort of taken a shot at it. Einstein says, time exists so that everything doesn't happen at the same time. Which sounds like a joke, except, you know, in some deep way. I mean, Einstein was a thinker about time. So in a deep way, it's really true. Another thing that's really hard about time to grasp is scale. A couple decades ago, Carl Sagan did this thing called the cosmic calendar. So putting events from the beginning of the universe, which would happen, you know, at 12:01 a.m. on January 1st to today, which would be midnight on December 31st, that put all of time in that 12-month period to see how we fit in relatively. And according to that cosmic calendar, we didn't even have this atmosphere of oxygen until December 1st. And dinosaurs didn't show up until Christmas Eve, believe it or not. And human beings, our sort of Homo sapiens, 10:30 p.m. on December 31st. So that's sort of an exercise in humility with where we are with our role in this universe. So I'm not going to really attempt to define time. I really want to talk about something that's on my mind right now, which is wasting time. And it has something to do with my Zen practice. So a couple weeks ago, I went to the T-Mobile store because my phone was not cooperating. And I spent about 10 minutes talking to this clerk, and I finally, she got it through my thick head that my not even three-year-old phone was a complete dinosaur, and that I needed to get another phone. And I, you know, I like to keep things for a long time, so that was not, I was not happy with that. So then I finally said, okay, I'll get a new phone. And then I spent a whole hour talking to her and another clerk, going through how to pick a phone and pay for the phone and transfer all the stuff from one phone to another. And at some point, the picture of the Han came into my head. It said, life and death is the great matter. Do not waste time. I was so frustrated with being in that place. It's not the way I wanted to spend my time, talking about this phone that I actually hated. So anyway, I'm not really sure what wasting time is. I almost asked Tigan, what is wasting time? When we had our, at the end of our 5-day retreat a couple of weeks ago, we had a ceremony where everyone gets to ask Tigan one question, and everyone else gets to hear the question and the answer. And I almost asked him that, but I ended up asking him, actually I ended up asking him about money.
Time is money.
So, you know, wasting time, I think it means different things to different people. I know that for me, wasting time is, it's sort of this emotional experience. I really get upset about it. So that's why I thought I might want to be looking into it. So there's this one category of wasting time that I think of as time robbing. That's the T-Mobile store, where it's like looking for a parking spot or traffic jams, you know. It's not our choice. We're just like, time just gets stolen from us. And then there's this other kind of time wasting where it's really our fault. You know, if I had all the time back I spent in my life looking for my keys, that'd be like an extra year of life, probably, because I just lose my keys. So I feel like it's not time we're spending, it's our life we're spending. So it's not time we're wasting, it's our life we're wasting. So cultivating patience is one idea, one way to not waste time, or to think about this time that I'm calling wasted differently. How can I make the most of this opportunity in the T-Mobile store? What can I learn from this? Who are these lovely young people who spend all day thinking about phones? I can find some meaning in that if I really am try and patient and don't, you know, get wrapped up in my own craziness. So, you know, finding value in moments that are annoying. So you have to park far away. So that's a great opportunity for a walk. But that really isn't my most valuable insight about wasting time. I think there's this other category of time wasting that's more important to think about. So I'm sure you, like me, have this value of being productive. I spent a lot of my years of my life being busy and being efficient with my time. And I've known Tigan for 7 or 8 years now, and more than once, many times more than once, he's suggested that I look for the Laurel who is not busy. And I think I'm finally starting that search. So that's sort of what this talk is about. One of our chants ends with, so the harmony of difference and sameness, we chant this sometimes on Monday night. It ends with a couplet. I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, do not pass your days and nights in vain. And Dogen says that same thing in the Fukan Zazengi. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? Besides, Form and substance are like the dew on the grass, the fortunes of life like a dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. So these have been the koans I've been sort of sitting with over the last few months. About a year ago, I retired, and it's been an interesting year, and not the least of which has been reimagining my relationship with time. When people ask me why I retired, because I didn't really have to retire. I mean, no one was telling me I had to retire, and I love my job. It's a really good job that I get a lot of satisfaction from. But I what I would say to people was, I'd rather have the time than the money. So Tygen said earlier, time is money. I mean, it was an interesting trade-off between time and money. And I had absolutely no problem adjusting to less money. I just spent less money, that was that. It was straightforward, no agonizing, no whatever. But time was a different thing. So I had more time, and instead of feeling rich, I was more worried about wasting that time. So it's interesting. I know, you know, the older you get, the more you think you have less time. You know, that may or may not be true. People don't know when they're going to die, but the older you get, the more likely it is. I don't have 50 years left, probably. But when I was working, you know, so I had 60 hours a week on my job, sort of, and then everything else, like every day was a to-do list and every minute was allotted to something. And I was really good at it and I didn't waste time, I thought. And if I look at my journals, you know, it's almost like an annotated to-do list. What did I do? What am I going to do? What didn't I do? You know, how did I... And I've been pretty busy since I retired, and some of it has been a workload here at Ancient Dragon, but I have had a lot more unstructured time, and it's sort of turned my idea about wasted time upside down. So, you know, with the to-do list, it's like, ooh, you know, I didn't pay the electric bill or whatever, the endless minutia on the... but now I find that what feels like my most valuable time is when I'm not doing. And it's almost like the difference between being and doing. And so I've been looking at this and thinking about it and trying to feel what it means and seeing what other people have to say about it. There's a lot in the Dharma that I would summarize as saying the most profligate waste of time is busyness. And the guidepost for the Hall of Pure Bliss says, the others die from being too busy, but I maintain continuity. So continuity as opposed to too busy. It's like busyness is about interrupting and distracting, and continuity is sort of the other side of that coin. So Peter Coyote was here a few weeks ago, and I decided after he was here, he's an interesting character, I decided to read his memoir, which is called Sleeping Where I Fall. And it's about the 60s and 70s when a lot of people were experimenting with alternative lifestyles. And he says in there, there was generally not too much anxiety because despite lack of money, we had all the time in the world. What we had lost in material surplus, we more than made up for with the luxury of unstructured free time. So I'm not convinced that they had it all figured out. I mean, they did a lot of crazy stuff, some of which seemed destructive. But it was an interesting experiment to try to live without money and only have time. Actually, one of the more entertaining parts of the book is when Coyote met Gary Snyder. And Gary Snyder, another Buddhist, was also experimenting with alternative lifestyles, but in a much more disciplined way, vastly more disciplined way. So it's sort of interesting. But I think we can also learn from artists and poets just about anything Emily Dickinson wrote is really deeply instructive on her insight into the value of non-busy time. I'm having trouble knowing what language to call that, but other artists as well. There's this Flaubert, this famous quote, he was sort of bragging about his writing. He says, "I spent the morning putting in a comma and the afternoon removing it." Now, so that's usually, I always thought that was about criticizing him for being too much of a perfectionist, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's really about him talking about his creative process. I mean, he was really in that sentence in a way that's sort of unfathomable in some ways. And so it's like that, to me, that's not wasting time in this sort of way I'm thinking about wasting time. So, So another part of talking about busyness. So this is, do people know Thomas Merton? He was very interested in Buddhism, but he was actually a Trappist monk. Wonderful, wonderful writer and a hermit for a big part of his life. So he writes about a life of prayer. And I think his prayer is sort of a synonym for what we call Zazen. Anyway, he talks about quiet. So this is, "As you know, I've been living as a sort of hermit. And now I've been out of that atmosphere for about 3 or 4 weeks and talking a lot. And I get the feeling that so much talking goes on that is utterly useless. Something has been said perfectly well in 5 minutes, and then you spend the next 5 hours saying the same thing over and over again." So I thought that was great. And I was thinking about, like, my favorite way to spend time with people recently has been doing Tai Chi, singing in choirs, doing zazen, bird watching. These are intimate ways to communicate with people that have nothing to do with talking, which I agree with Merton, and so often is just blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he says more about this life of prayer. He says, "We were indoctrinated so much into the means and ends that we don't realize that there's a different dimension in the life of prayer. In technology, you have this horizontal progress where you must start at one point and move to another and then another. But that's not the way to build a life of prayer. In prayer, we discover what we already have. You start where you are and you deepen what you already have and you realize you are already there. We already have everything, but we don't know it and we don't experience it. Everything has been given to us. All we need is to experience what we already possess." And then his key point about time, "The trouble is we aren't taking time to do so." So, you know, he says if we really want prayer, we have to give it time. We have to slow down to a human tempo and begin to have time to listen. And I think this year of unstructured, mostly unstructured, at least more than I used to have unstructured time, is allowing to unfold in my life. I mean, Merton always talks about connecting with nature and slowing down. He says, one of the best things for me when I went to the Hermitage was being attentive to the times of day when the birds began to sing and the deer came out of the morning fog and the sun come up. The reason why we don't take time is a feeling that we have to keep moving. This is a real sickness. Today, time is commodity. And for each one of us, time is mortgaged. We experience time as unlimited indebtedness. We are sharecroppers of time. We are threatened by a chain reaction, overwork, overstimulation, overcompensation, overkill. Wow. So anyway, he sort of ends that essay by quoting Suzuki Roshi of all people, which took me by surprise. And I tried to find this quote, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So maybe, Taigen, you know if this is truly something that Suzuki Roshi said. But according to Merton, Suzuki Roshi said that a Zen student must learn to waste time conscientiously. So that's where what I'm working on now. It's my work in progress of wasting time conscientiously. And I found this nice little book. Do people know? I'm not even sure how to pronounce his name. Pico Iyer or Pico Iyer? He's actually a travel writer. If you're ever planning to go to Nepal, I really recommend his book about. It's called Video Nights in Kathmandu. Anyway, he's a wonderful, wonderful travel writer. But this book is called The Art of Stillness, Adventures in Going Nowhere. So it's a different kind of travel. And it's a very small book. He said it's small because he wants you to be able to read it in one sitting and not waste a lot of time. But he was, as a person who spent his whole life going everywhere on the globe and writing about it, he wanted to write about not going anywhere and thinking about what that kind of travel is. And one of the first things he did was go and interview Leonard Cohen, because he grew up, even though he has this very exotic name, he actually grew up in Southern California. And so he went and visited Leonard Cohen up on his mountain down there and asked him how to meditate. And he got a lesson in that, and he loved. I mean, this guy's only in his 30s, so he was talking to this guy, you know, in his, I think he was 77 at the time he was interviewed, and he was very impressed with the passion with which Cohen, who's had this very, people know Leonard Cohen, right? He's like a poet and a world traveler, and has had hit record albums. And if you ever see any of his concerts, they're just spectacular. They're like 3-hour long Rinzai ceremonies that everything is completely perfect and planned. But anyway, he quotes Cohen as saying, sitting still is the real deep entertainment, real profound and voluptuous and delicious entertainment. The real feast that is available within this activity. And this really struck this young writer, who then went on to interview lots of other people, and he too talks about some of the people I've mentioned. But he ends the book with this lovely paragraph that I'll read to you. So, in an age of acceleration, nothing can be more exhilarating than going slow. In an age of distraction, nothing is so luxurious as paying attention. And in an age of constant movement, nothing is so urgent as sitting still. So you can go on your next vacation to Paris or Hawaii or New Orleans. I bet you'll have a wonderful time. But if you want to come back home alive and full of fresh hope, in love with the world, I think you might want to try considering going nowhere. I'm just trying to decide how to end this talk, because it's time. So I have two other people I want to I want to quote, because the big question is, how do you do that? You know, it's hard. I mean, we're, our culture makes us, puts us into this position. And, you know, tricks us into being busy, tricks us into thinking we have to be busy. I want to remember John Lennon talking about getting off the merry-go-round and saying, people say I'm crazy, people say I'm lazy. And I think we're not crazy and we're not lazy if we try to get off the merry-go-round. And that it's a good idea to try in so much as we can, not all day, every day, maybe, but to at least give ourselves that opportunity some of the time, as much as we can. And my last person I'm going to quote is my favorite Buddhist of all, Mr. Rogers, who said, and he said this in Congress too, bless his heart, he was so brave. He says, this is a song, I don't know the tune, I only know the word. So, I can stop when I want to, can stop when I wish, can stop anytime. And what a good feeling to feel like this. Yay, Mr. Rogers. Thank you.
So, thank you very much, Laurel. A wonderful, wonderful, inspiring talk. Comments, responses, questions, please feel free. Joan.
Thank you for that talk. It was great. And I've been retired for a few years now. So I'm a little ahead of you. And I find that there are times when I end up with a number of things scheduled and it feels like too much. It's like, now I need some time when there's nothing on my calendar. It's an interesting adjustment to realize that it seemed normal to have every day lots of things on my calendar every day. Now it feels so much better not to have that unstructured time, to let the day just unfold in whatever way it does. It feels really good.
Yeah, and you know, it's like unstructured time isn't nothing. It reminds me of like, developers go to a natural area and they say, there's nothing there. And then they want to build something, right? It's the same thing with unstructured time. We think of it as nothing, but it actually, there's a lot there. We'll have to build something. It's really a different, it seems so clear, but it's really hard to remember that when we're sitting in a chair or whatever it is we're doing, lying on the floor, or staring out the window, or petting our cat, or... Anyway, thank you, Joan.
I remember when I first started practicing meditation many years ago and encountering a quote from Chogyam Trungpa, who, upon coming to the West from Tibet, commented that he thought maybe all the busyness he encountered in the West was a form of laziness.
Huh.
And that he saw it as a form of violence against the self, too much busyness. And I had, it struck me because I had never even questioned busyness. It was so much a part, ingrained in my way of life. So it helped me to stop and think about that and how that was affecting me and my life.
Hmm.
Thank you for your talk, Laurel.
Thank you.
Any of the younger people want to speak about the value of cell phones?
Yeah. You did get a new cell phone.
Or anything else. Angie.
Oh, thank you for your talk. I too think about time a lot, and as I was listening to you, it almost seemed like it wasn't so much to talk about what time is, but how to live your life within the context of time, you know. And because I'm not really convinced, I guess, that there is such a thing as time. It's kind of radical. I don't know what the physicists say, but I think there's probably a lot of disagreement there too. But yeah, I don't know myself. I'm kind of a daydreamer. I waste a lot of time, and I think about that a lot. But yeah, I was just kind of thinking as you were talking about that, you know, what would be the case if, you know, if really time was kind of an illusion, you know, and we just, you know, time is just a tool, you know, and like we say, okay, we're going to come to Ancient Dragon at 9:30 and meditate, you know, versus, well, as the crow flies, you know, we'll just meet there, you know, and everybody will come at all these different times.
Someone will just ring the bell randomly.
It's useful in a lot of ways. So, I don't know. I contemplate about it a lot. It's a really good, deep question. But
I love that idea of daydreaming. I remember once we hired a guy to write a particular long essay, and he was going to have 6 months, and he said, "Well, can I come to the office to write it because you have all the books and blah blah blah?" I said, "Sure." So he would sit at his desk and he would play tic-tac-toe on the computer for 3 hours, and I said, "Jerry, you can't do that in the office." And he said, "I'm writing." And, you know, it's just a different, that's what his process was. And it was not that he wasn't writing, it just looked different. It was a different stage of writing than the actual putting the words on the paper. So I learned a lot from that. I never bothered him again.
Jeremy.
Yeah, so I think the language is kind of funny of wasting time and spending time.
Uh-huh.
It sounds extremely transactional.
Yes.
I think that there's a real pitfall in thinking of it that way, because we think of it as belonging to maybe somebody or myself.
Mm-hmm. Commodity.
Yeah, like a commodity you have to maximize or something like that. So I think I heard Rev Anderson maybe rephrase it in the way of sharing, like the availability. He or any teacher can kind of attest to kind of having to be in a state of availability. And there's a period, maybe we might say period of time, where you are available. And it's not such a thing of like, you know, I'm spending this commodity to be available to you because it's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm here
mm-hmm.
with you, for you, or
mm-hmm.
together, and kind of like a sharing kind of moment, sharing the time. I think it can be kind of sad maybe sometimes when we think that we're really wasting something we have. You know, and it's maybe ungraspable or something.
Yeah. Well, what do you think it means on the Han?
That's a whole 45 minute.
Yeah.
I think the taking care of oneself is the great matter. Something along those lines.
I asked my friend about wasting time. I thought, oh, I'll just ask. She said, I think it's like pornography. You can't define it, but you know it when you see it. So, yeah. It's uncomfortable to have that feeling that you're not doing the right, whatever, the appropriate thing. There's no words that say it right. That's why I like his idea of just being still. Still sort of is in space and in time. So to me, that's a helpful image of stillness. I don't know.
I just saw the movie Wild, which is sort of a
I want to
based on the story of Cheryl Strayed's walk through the Pacific Crest Trail out in California and Oregon as a means of sort of, I think she started with the purpose of getting her life back on track from what felt like a lot of bad decisions and mistakes. And one of the things that, I don't think this is a spoiler, but one of the things that she says at the end is, what if all those things weren't mistakes? What if they really were all necessary experiences to get me where I am now? And I sometimes think about that with my life. When I think about, I never think I'm wasting time, but when I think back on some times, I think, well, maybe that, you know, maybe that was kind of a waste. Maybe it wasn't necessary, but maybe it was, you know? The times that I've spent daydreaming about, you know, repetitively about things that will never happen, that I no longer feel, but I no longer feel the need to daydream about those things anymore. But, you know, so when I think of wasting time, I think of maybe the times that I've been kind of caught up in things without awareness, or, you know, and awareness seems to be what she gained by this walk. And so I don't know, but I don't think we have control over our awareness all the time. You know, we can try to cultivate it, and it will sometimes, you know, sometimes show up for us as like a helpful, you know, aid, but I don't know that it's something that we have control over. And I definitely don't want to be in control over how I spend all my time.
Yeah. Good. A couple things, just following up on what a few people have said. Well, one thing was that Reb was once asked, what's wasting time? And he said, forgetting the one who's not busy. So having that sense of space or stillness. But going back to what Angie was saying about there not being any time, Dogen talks about time as being, so that they're agreeing with you, basically, that there's no such thing as time, you know, like the 24 hours or whatever. Time is just what we are being, doing, saying, acting. It's not separate from our sense of walking or whatever. So we think of time as, you know, something out there that we have to save or work with, but actually time is just us.
Yeah, there's a really wonderful book, Ruth Ozeki's book, For the Time Being, a contemporary novel by a... She's going to come here, right?
She's going to be here next year, yeah.
Anyway, November. She experiments with some of these ideas about time.
Yes. Last comment. David, did you have something?
You kind of said it. I was thinking when we were talking, it's not so much about time, but it's about the energy we put into the task we're doing at the moment. And how the sense of accomplishment or the energy that we put into that moment to do something. And it's not so much as it takes an hour, if it takes a half hour. Even this morning when I woke up, should I waste the 15 minutes going to Zendo? And all I have to do is I just go sit in my chair and I can meditate at home. and part of it for me said, no, it's the purpose of coming here and being here, that's what I want to accomplish. It wasn't so much the time I spent, but what I'm trying to create and to be in that moment. And that's maybe the difference. You know, so I make my to-do list. God, I have to-do lists up the wazoo. You know, even on the weekend, it's not a business. Okay, I got to do this at 12:10 and do this at 20 and have it all charted out because I want to maximize my time. It's more about accomplishing the task and be wholeheartedly in the task. You're kind of tiger, you know, got me just now that it's what we are rather than a commodity germ and saying not like it's a commodity to be spent, you know, or to be killed.
Yeah, I love that idea of Merton talking about having our time be mortgaged. Someone else owns it. Oh.
Well, thank you all for good comments, and thank you, Laurel, very much for a very helpful talk, I thought.